The future belongs to those who control the culture, and the culture belongs to those who control the conversation. So we are having the conversations you wish you could have at church to build a safe and vibrant community. This is the Oz Table Talk Podcast. Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of Oz Table Talk. My name is Luke and I am at the table with Dave Stephen Ore. Good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening.
Good evening.
How you doing?
Do you know what I'd like to hear?
What?
A montage of all your introductions. I reckon they would be so similar that it wouldn't be funny.
Yeah. Well, I was about to say that, like, that probably would be a very boring piece of yeah. audio.
I just noticed as you came in there, it was with the same like rhythm or melody or whatever you want to call it that you normally do.
Hey,
it's amazing.
I speak with melody. Awesome. I'll take that.
When you do your intro, you sort of wind up.
So you're trying to tell me the rest of the time I talk like what?
Don't you? Hasn't somebody said you've got the voice for radio? And like you got the best voice at the table or something? Apart from Steve.
Apart from Steve, yeah, that's right.
Because certain people just have this fascination with Steve. Thanks, Cody. Anyway, what were you asking? How are we doing?
Good. I said how you were doing, but yeah.
Yeah. Well, so much better now that we've heard that. you've lifted us with your intro.
You've just
slaughtered a mosquito.
Yes, that's a good word.
Prevented us from getting Ross River.
Yes, thank you. You've saved us all.
Yeah. How's your holidays going, Doc?
Yeah, it's been good. Yeah, it's just good to be able to just take a step back and and recover from. I see this as recovering from the last like 10 years of study. I've just taken that as an opportunity to just regroup myself and think of the next challenges.
Yeah. So in this time off, like, what are you doing to recover aside from like nothing?
Oh, it's just
or a lot of that
reading,
sport,
catching up on errands, just getting stuff that I know I won't get time to do when I'm back. So
And how long are you off for?
5 weeks.
5 weeks. Yeah. Okay. Oh wow, that's a good long rest.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. How about you, Steve? What are you up to?
Just studying work.
Yep, studying work. Yep. Rinse and repeat. Yep.
Yep. Public holiday. Woo.
Well, let's jump on to our Humans of Adventism question for this week. And the question is, if you could start any new ministry at your church, what would it be? Now, I'm going to insert the information here that it doesn't have to be something that necessarily has to be perfect and you know it operate perfectly. This is making the assumption it would be a success. What ministry would you start at your local church?
Easy.
Easy.
Such an easy question.
Yep. No question for you. It would be?
It'd be a vegetarian cafe or restaurant for sure.
Yep.
No questions asked.
Yeah, that's it. Just
very nice.
Well, the problem with that is that now I
have... Hey, you said that works. There was...
No. So the problem with that is now I have to pick something else.
Oh.
No, we can just do it together.
Yeah, let's do it together. All right. Well, the only other thing that I was thinking, by the way, would have been like job placement and that sort of thing, because then you are helping people get on their feet, and I think it's just a really interesting thing that could complement the rest of what we do really well.
Yeah, so. Especially a good one here.
Yeah,
unemployment's
exactly.
very high.
Yep,
I'm actually kind of leaning towards. Kind of a combination of that. Well, I have two in my mind.
So a cafe where they find you a job?
not quite, but like for me, like it would be nice to get like just do like local health talks. Like it's something that is very easy to do, and it'd be really nice to get the community engaged in that. But also, I was also thinking like maybe like an academic kind of tutoring thing.
Yeah.
Where like local students from institutions can come and get some tutoring and stuff, and it could
That's
also be for people who speak English as a second language. Get some like English classes and stuff. That'd be really good.
Yeah. You wouldn't have to like do too much prep. I'm saying this possibly with a little bit of an assumption here, but like if you had enough people who know what they're talking about, you wouldn't have to prep too much. Like they just bring what they need help with.
Yeah.
And Google always works, yeah. If you don't know.
Yeah,
that would be great.
I love how your two ideas are things that you could do as well. You could totally pull both of those off.
Yeah. You wouldn't need too many resources either.
No.
Like, you just need a platform and people.
Yeah, that makes it attractive. Mm. So what about you, Steve?
Yeah, I'd be keen for a climbing gym of some sort. It's not overly spiritual, but it's a good outreach.
Oh, it's fantastic.
Yeah, just getting people doing stuff together, helping each other, challenging each other.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, I'd love to see something like that. That'd be awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, food's not spiritual either. But the idea is meeting people. Yeah. Mm. And climbing gym's great for that. And so is food.
Yeah. I think it's one of the things
for that.
There's food always on board. It's okay. I think
first customer lined up.
I think it's really important because we live in an age where social interaction doesn't really happen unless people choose it, right? Like people see the people that they see at work, they see the people they see at home, but the only people they interact with outside of that are the people they choose to. You go back a few generations and it wasn't that way. You know, you had to interact with everybody around you in your neighborhood or in your town because it was necessary to live. You couldn't just sit at home and order groceries. You know, you had to go and do and be a part of the local society. You don't have to now. Mm-hmm. But where that does happen organically is in the commerce world, right? In restaurants, in cafes. And that's probably the last place, if I guess you could say, where those serendipitous exchanges still happen. And so I think as a church, we should be putting our presence in those places.
Mm, definitely.
So speaking of things that the church should do, this series that we're starting right now is actually a throwback to a series that we did a while back, which was three things the church got wrong. And so we had a look at a few things, a few times where there were missteps by our church, and we just drew some lessons out of that. And we thought if we're going to highlight the bad things and how to improve them, it's actually healthy for us to shine a light on the good stuff as well. And so obviously we are going to be speaking from our context because I can't talk about your church because I haven't been there, but we can talk about ours, and we're just going to reflect on some of the things that our church has done well over its time. So
yeah, and we're going to do five things, so more positives than negatives.
good, it's a winner, right? Okay, so well, where are we going to start, Dave?
Well, I think we should start with Adventist identity because, so central to the Seventh-day Adventist denomination / message is these two pillars that our name was sort of built around, and that is Seventh Day, so the Sabbath, and the Advent of Jesus, so the first and second Advent. Our message is particularly hinges upon that second Advent.
Mm.
So, so Adventist identity is something that we feel the church has got right, but why? Why do we feel like that's important and good?
Mm.
Why are the Sabbath and the Second Coming such great discoveries from those early Adventist pioneers?
I would say the Second Coming is primarily important because without it, then we start losing reasons, I guess you could say, for what we do or what we believe. You know, we are holding anticipation, we are evangelizing, we are trying to bring the gospel to others. And while that is valuable in and of itself, even before you put the good news, if you like, of the Second Coming onto it, without the Second Coming, there's no payoff at the end, so to speak. Like, you don't see the reaping of those rewards. Even though there are rewards temporarily, you don't see the eternal rewards, I guess you could say.
Yeah. And I think the two of them share a common theme in that they're connecting us with God.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's like the main point of the Christian message.
Yeah.
But yeah, we've got the Sabbath where we get to connect with God on a weekly basis, like as well as our own personal connections.
Mm.
And then the Second Coming's the ultimate fulfillment of that, the reuniting of what the original intention was supposed to be.
Mm-hmm. So the redemptive doctrines, in other words, you know, they're about restoring that harmony between God and man. Yeah, I really like that. Just back to what you were saying, look, maybe a good way of putting that would be to say it's a conclusion to like the story of humanity.
Yeah.
The Second Coming provides some sort of an end point to which I guess we can look forward to because, you know, we see this, you know, prophesied change after that point.
Yeah.
Whereas up until that point, the message is that things are going to continue to spiral out of control.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's a good news message,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. If nothing ever actually changed and we were stuck on this cycle, then what did Jesus die for?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, yeah.
So there's a good focus there.
Yeah.
Well, I'll say regarding the Sabbath, say because the Protestant Reformation as a whole is predicated on
trying to return back to the core principles of what made Christianity Christianity, mm. like the what true Christianity meant. Mm. And I think the Sabbath was kind of like the reason why it was so momentous. It was like a major cornerstone that that was kind of discovered, which kind of helped us to remind ourselves like what it means to truly live a Christ-like life in a way that is reflective of God's ideal. So we're kind of going back to that, and I think that discovery. I think if Adventism didn't embrace it, I think we would have been missing a key piece towards that restoration.
Just from a theological perspective, part of the significance of that piece that you're talking about, all right, is that the Sabbath, far from what it's seen as, is like one of the biggest, strongest references to there being no works whatsoever involved in salvation.
Yes.
Right? It's one of the strongest references in all of Scripture to our salvation coming through grace alone. Mm-hmm. And so I think that the significance of that cornerstone that you're talking about there is that foundational piece of the message of Scripture, where we have to have faith in God's grace for our salvation. Mm-hmm. And yet somehow misconstrued, the Sabbath has become almost a message of works to those who don't truly understand it. Mm. And so it's funny, like I think we're going to say this a lot through this series, but when like the things that we get right, we often also get wrong, right? And so sometimes as a denomination, as a people, we get wrong the projection of the Sabbath that we share, in that we don't bring out that aspect of the Sabbath message, like that theological, I guess, foundation, if you like, that the Sabbath is all about God being the one who finished the work. He finished the work of making us, into the people that we were to be able to be created in his image. And then he finished the work of remaking us in Christ to give us a new identity. And that is so significant. And so we really, really, really need to continue to get that right as Adventists, particularly. And I think that, if the rest of Christianity was given an opportunity to embrace that truth, whether in the Sabbath doctrine or not, that is so, so important.
Yeah, 100%. I was listening to an audiobook just recently, and it's called The Ruthless Elimination of Hurry by John Mark Comer. And I highly recommend the book to anybody who is interested. And he is not an Adventist, but he does keep the Sabbath. And what I found super refreshing about the book is that often, in our church anyway, I believe, just like we're all saying here, that the Sabbath itself is valuable. But I think we communicate it in a way that does not do it justice often. Yeah. Yeah. And sure, there are individuals that get it and understand it and preach it accurately, but they are not necessarily the norm. This guy who does not hold to our church, who's not a part of our church, I think has probably one of the best understandings of Sabbath that I've ever heard. And the way he presented it, I couldn't help but think to myself, even if you didn't even believe in God, the way the Sabbath was presented is good enough. Like you would want to be, you would want that in your life anyway, because it is, from a practical perspective, it provides that mental health check. It stops you at the end of the week. It allows you to have that self-reflection, evaluation, and to build up the relationships with the people that are around you. And if you believe in God, then it allows you to build up that relationship with him as well.
Yeah.
And it's just such a beautiful thing when you understand it rightly. And as we've been saying over and over again, it's when you misunderstand it that everything goes pear-shaped.
I think part of the impetus why I bring this up is that I feel like a lot of non-Adventists will share that perspective on the other nine commandments. Like I think they don't have any issue, like you'll be hard pressed to find a Christian who isn't an Adventist who will deny that thou shalt not kill is a important commandment to keep, even if they did believe that the commandments were nailed on the cross or whatever. But I think like the fact that just reminding them that that the Sabbath is part of that, should also fit part of that picture as well, of that understanding what we're just talking about, in that we should view it as more of a relational thing, not just something that we have to do it because we have to do it to be saved.
Yeah.
Just putting a highlight around it, just putting, I guess, if you like, a quotation mark or an underline on that law, I think is significant just for that itself. Yeah.
Luke, you put out to a group of people this week, you know, what do you think the church got right? And I really liked the way that it was expressed around this Sabbath concept. I can't remember who it was in the chat that said this, but he said, specifically, they said the Sabbath as a restorative practice, not just the Sabbath as a doctrine.
Yeah.
I think that's what you were just communicating from your most recent favorite book.
Mm-hmm.
is that, the Sabbath is all about restoration. And that restoration, as Steve pointed out at the beginning, is restoration of God and man. But it's not just that. It's restoration on all levels, right? It's the Sabbath is a restoration of physical, mental, emotional, spiritual well-being.
Mm.
And I personally don't know how I would survive without that day that just gives you that opportunity to just put everything else down. You know, sometimes you're juggling so many things during the week that without Sabbath, I think I would have gone insane.
Yeah, no, I can totally relate to that. Like, even just one thing that the Sabbath does for me that I didn't even realize it did until, you know, just the last year or so, and that is, it is like a, what's the best way to say it? It is like a check to figure out if you're, if you have any idols in your life. Because anything that you get to, you know, the end of the week and Sabbath arrives, anything that you can't let go of for that 24 hours... There's a fairly good indicator that there's something you need to address there. There's something there that is taking more of your attention or more of your affection than Jesus is. And I've definitely noticed things in my life that I've then had to, you know, consequently figure out and work on because I realize that it intrudes into that time of rest and I just can't put it down. And so that tells me, okay, well, there's something unhealthy about my relationship with that thing, whatever that thing is.
Mm. Yeah. And I just want to say that just while we're on the Sabbath point, I think not only do we sometimes get our expression of Sabbath wrong in a doctrinal sense, but I think also in our practice.
Mm.
I think a lot of Seventh-day Adventists don't really know what Sabbath means from an experiential point of view, because we've maybe grown up with a wrong idea of what Sabbath is. And seen it more like you were saying, or as something that we need to keep, you know, in order to be saved or something like that, rather than it being, you know, an opportunity for us to just stop and recognize that God has saved us and it being a praise event, you know, like an opportunity to just lift God up and be like, damn, I don't know what I've done to deserve someone as good as you in my life, you know? I think it's something, whilst we get it right in theory, I think we get it wrong in practice too often, and I throw myself in the mix there. I know I don't experience Sabbath the way I'd like to most Sabbaths. I think that's something that we can also, not only have we got it right, but we can also work on.
Yeah.
Just want to throw that out there. Anyone that's listening, cheering this on, being like, yeah, we get the Sabbath right. Yeah, just make sure you get the Sabbath right.
Yeah. And you know, I was just thinking as you were talking, Dave, about how that understanding came to our church, like, you know, back in the 1800s. You know, it was something that was definitely misunderstood. And even though our pioneers of our church got it, so to speak, it took them years to figure out what it actually meant.
Yeah.
You know, like...
They were just keeping it as a day, you know, to set them apart from everyone else, to make them better.
Yeah.
To begin with.
That's right. That's right. And they didn't... And I don't even think they necessarily figured it out for decades, right? Like, this is something that, and so that begs the question, do we get it now, right? Like we're saying, I think we do understand it a lot better than they did, and I think that's one of the reasons why if you read some of the earlier writings, their understanding of Sabbath does sound different to how we're discussing it right now. That's because they were learning, they were growing, they were going through that rediscovery process of the principles. But I think the Sabbath, as we understand it better in our own experience, how we keep it changes throughout our life too. And so it is a part of the sanctification process. As we understand it better, we understand God better, the relationships grow.
And the second aspect, the second coming, like we spoke about it briefly at the beginning, but just to sort of elaborate a little bit more, I think the second coming doctrine
is also really significant, you know, in that sense that we were talking about it being a conclusion, but also something that we'll get to a little bit more in another episode. Is it talks about judgment.
I was just thinking that.
And bringing about a just end what's been going on in this world, you know, us trashing it for centuries. And so I think that, I think the second coming message, you know, like our world, our population is becoming more and more interested in saving the environment. And so obviously we're growing in our concern for what humanity is doing to the planet, right? Which you could say is the repercussions of our choices. Mm. And the second coming is about setting those things right. Yeah. So the second coming is a really powerful message in that sense as well.
And in a sense of Adventist identity, like I see the second coming as just a waymark, so to speak, like a kind of like a like an icon that helps you to stay focused and, you know, give you your bearings. Mm-hmm. And like I feel like as in terms of how we internalize that from a day to day basis, it helps us give us perspective on how we live our lives every day, knowing that Jesus is coming soon. Therefore, we adjust our lives accordingly, as opposed to if we didn't have that sense of Jesus' second coming, we may be more blasé in how we approach life. So from a psychological point of view, I think it really forms a big part of our psyche in that sense, and how we go about life.
Yeah, for sure.
Would you, like, if you did, and obviously, you know, there is this tension, right, between believing that Jesus is coming back soon and believing that he's coming back next week, right? Mm. There is still a difference between those two things. Mm. You know, we affirm that he is coming back soon. We believe that's going to happen. Exactly the date when that's going to happen, we don't know. But the idea is to live in readiness, because we do believe that it's going to be in our lifetime at some point. A question that I would ask you guys is, because, you know, like you're saying, that psychological effect that believing this has, do you think that you would live your life any differently if you knew that Jesus was coming back in, you know, say 6 months? Or do you think you would change what you're doing?
I think you'd have to. Mm. Like, if you knew it as a fact, like, your priorities shift, or you'd think they would shift immediately. Like, because you no longer have to worry to an extent or to the same extent about the other things that take up our time. And I don't know if this is the right forum to discuss this question in, but you say that we affirm Jesus is coming soon, which I'd agree with, but how do I phrase this right? The church has always affirmed that. And I know as we get further and further through history, it's becoming more and more true by definition.
Yeah.
But should we be living as if Jesus is coming soon, or I don't know. Like,
or,
I guess,
or learning from history.
Yeah, like, I don't know. Because, like, especially with world events at the moment, you know, you see that it's going downhill a lot faster than it has been. So I'd agree with the sentiment, but I don't know.
Yeah,
sorry. That's,
yeah, I think I hear you.
Are you trying to say, without actually saying it, that, you know, there is still the possibility that we could live and die, and Jesus would still be coming soon, but not necessarily here and now, right?
There is that possibility. Yes.
Yeah, that's... and I am totally comfortable at admitting that, because we don't know, and that's what's happened to, you know, multiple generations of people who have believed that the second coming is near. Mm. I still believe it's near, like you say. The signs are there. I don't have a problem with believing that. What I do see in scripture is that those signs, you know, we can be in a holding pattern for a while. And typically what tends to happen in history is that you hit this punctilious point, and all of a sudden it's just bangst, and things happen. All right. And we're waiting for that point. When that point's going to hit, not sure. We're getting closer to it, but you know, I'm okay with it being, you know, further away or closer. But the reason that I asked that question as to what you would do if you knew it was like close... in the imminent, the reason that I ask that is because I think it is a good check for us. If your life would change by way of, okay, you now know you don't have to save for retirement, you know you don't have to, you know those things aren't going to change. Those things, that makes a good deal of sense for those things to change. Mm. But I think we should live in such a way so as to strive that at least at a character level, we would live no differently.
Yeah.
Than if we thought he was coming in 80 years or if we thought he was coming in 6 months. We yep. should be comfortable with who we are in him at any given moment. Sure, the details may change, which is what you were talking about. But yeah, yeah. At least who we are, I don't think we should be thinking, oh, well, I'll straighten out my life right now. We should be already in a position where we're ready for that.
Yeah. The sad fact of the matter is, though, if you knew Jesus was coming in 6 months, you wouldn't straighten your life out now. You'd straighten your life out in 5.5 months' time. That's the sad fact of the matter, which is one of the reasons, I think, why God didn't tell us the day or the hour,
yeah.
so that we would live in this, you know,
state of anxiety.
No, constant state of readiness, right? Yeah, and I really, really appreciated your perspective when you answered that question, Steve, that I think that there are practical things that must change
yeah.
if we knew Jesus was coming sooner than, yeah. well, if we had a certain date on it, right? Yeah. Because then we no longer need to, you know, as you said, plan for retirement or...
Well, we've seen what happens, like 1844, we're talking about right. our church
identity.
They go
and sell everything and they do
yeah.
ministry.
Yeah, we saw what you'd hopefully be doing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Hopefully, yeah. Yeah. I would like to slightly challenge your perspective, Ore, if that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Because I agree with you, but I think it's a result of the fallen human mind that we need that psychological, you know, motivation of the second coming. Because
mm-hmm.
I think actually that if we require that motivation, that God's got a work to do in our heart yet. Mm-hmm. And I think actually we should be able to live with complete ambivalence to the second coming and still be doing everything we would be if we had that sense of urgency.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Do you agree with that?
I don't know if from a practical sense I 100% agree with that.
Yeah,
to be honest.
That's okay.
I would say, because like it has been mentioned, like we need to, there's something has to give.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, just from a personal perspective, like for me, like I have to think very seriously, like as to what specialty I'm going to do. Like there's certain specialties in medicine that require like literally like a good decade to complete before you're even capable of practicing independently.
Wow.
So in my mind, I'm thinking practically, like that, knowing that the impact that the second coming does have on a psychological level, like what kind of decisions am I going to make? Because of that, I might lean towards a specialty which won't take as much time, that way I can be in the mission field faster.
Yeah.
So it does play that inkling, and I think I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
Mm.
I think we do need to be pragmatic in the way we approach the decisions that we make in light of the fact that we know that Jesus is coming soon. Because otherwise, why would Jesus tell us that? We would just be like the rest of the world, just like do whatever. You know?
Yeah.
But I think that from a character building perspective, I would agree with that.
Mm.
I would agree in the sense that in terms of our relationship with Jesus, our devotional life, whether Jesus is coming tomorrow or in 10 years shouldn't
make a difference. Yeah.
But in terms of how we go about ministry, how we go about life, that might, you know, you would think there'll be some impact.
Mm.
Yeah. Well, I think you're referring more to a reward, Dave. Were you like the reason why you're...
Yeah.
So you're saying any decision?
I would still challenge him on that point, actually, but
okay.
I'm totally okay with that. Like, we don't have to agree.
Mm-hmm.
But what I would say to that, Mike, just your specific example, is that I would look at that from the perspective of just getting out to ministering to people sooner rather than getting out to ministering to people sooner because Jesus might be coming soon. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think the motivation is exactly the same. It's just the reason for the motivation changes slightly.
Mm-hmm.
And all I'm saying, I'm not saying that's a bad motivation, by the way, just to be really clear about that. I think the second coming is a great motivation, but I think we only need that motivation because of our fallen humanity that leads us away from doing the right thing anyway.
Yeah, we should have urgency to do the right thing.
Right.
Anyway.
Full stop. Yeah, that's my point.
Okay.
But I do agree with you that on a pragmatic level, I think we need it, right? And so I'm just philosophizing, really. So yeah. It really doesn't matter. But
So in other words, just forget the last hairs. 5 minutes of this conversation, everybody.
No, but learn from it, because yeah. I think it gives us a really good insight into the fact that we don't have to agree mm-hmm. on everything, right? Mm-hmm. Like, Ore and I are best mates, and yet we disagree yeah. on some things. Mm-hmm. You know, that's entirely possible.
Yeah, and I think that's actually something, and I know this is probably, I don't know if we'll talk about this in the future points, but as far as things the church gets right, mm. I think this is something that we need to, this is probably, you know, for another installment of the things the church doesn't do so well, you know, disagreeing with each other.
Yeah.
And I think we need to get better at that. I think we need to get better at disagreeing with each other whilst still loving each other.
Yeah.
But anyway, like I said, that's for another topic on another day.
Yeah.
Anyway, some of the stuff that we've been talking about already are what you would call doctrines or theology, right? So we've talked about the Adventist identity, but that is inextricably linked to our theology. What we believe, you know, is
always
solidly
is.
There.
That's right. Identity is always related to what you think.
100%.
Yeah, you can't escape that.
Yeah. So my point is, let's talk about other theology that the church has done well with.
Yeah. Are we going to do that now? Or are we going to do that in the next episode? Because I thought that was going to be the next episode.
Actually, that is true. It depends how long.
How
we
long
want
do
this,
you want this, episode,
want
to
this
be,
episode,
dude?
Episode to be?
Well, half an hour's long enough.
Yeah, we're at half an hour. So
can I just wrap this up for you?
Yeah, sure. Go for it.
Because I feel like you're going to wrap up without me having a chance to say this. I just wanted to point out, because I feel like we've done it in a way that's been, you know, sort of beaten around the bush a little bit, but I wanted to point out how we're saying this is the Adventist identity, and I want to say, why is that important? Mm. Because the salvation method is written all over these doctrines, right? Mm. Sabbath and Second Coming teach us that we are saved by grace alone mm-hmm. through faith in Jesus Christ, and that all of our hope lies in Jesus, right? Mm. All of our hope lies in Jesus through the Sabbath, and all of our hope lies in Jesus coming back to take us home to heaven with him at the second coming. Mm. And so I think, you know, Seventh-day Adventists have been given a name for being works-based, and we've earned that. Mm-hmm. You know, we've earned that. We'll take that. Yeah, we've worked for that one. but our intrinsic identity is actually faith-based, yeah. right? Completely grace by faith. That's our identity. Mm. And so I want to say that's fantastic, that our identity is grace by faith-based, right? But I just want to just qualify that by saying we need to get back to our identity, mm. right? Because we don't always live in a way that is, you know, trusting in God's grace entirely
yeah.
by faith. Mm. So, yeah. Anyway, I just wanted to throw that out there, because I think it's really important that we see that mm. that as not just in, but as the Adventist identity.
Yes.
Yeah. The salvation method.
Yep.
It's just, it's baked into who we are, mm. and yet sometimes we get it so wrong.
Mm. Yeah, 100%.
Anyway, I've had my say.
Yeah.
No. I'm done.
Mic drop.
But no, no, pen drop these days. You earned an A-wise last week.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, well, hang on a second. Everyone's going to be saying, what are they talking about? What happened to A-wise?
We had a debate last week in the Sabbath afternoon program.
Yeah.
One of the debate team, she was throwing the pen down, pen drop the whole time. She was just like saying these radical statements and then just dropping a pen like it was a mic. So it's now the pen drop.
Okay, there you go.
Not to be confused with the pin drop.
Yeah, makes so much sense. It's cheaper.
Cheaper than a mic.
Mics. Yeah. Yeah. I was just thinking that, you know, a mic drop is always such an anxiety producing thing for a podcaster.
Oh, yeah.
Dave, I think that your synopsis was very, very accurate. I think that's a really good place for us to land. So we will leave it there. And everybody, thank you for listening to this episode. If you've enjoyed this, share it with a friend, and we will catch you guys next week for the next installment. And that's the end of another episode. Just before I head off, I want to encourage you to go over to our page on Facebook and also our account on Instagram and follow us there, because that is where we interact with our listeners, and we would love for you to enter in and join the conversation. Also, while you're signing up, I would also recommend signing up to our mailing list on our website, oztabletalk.com.au. If you do that, you will receive our exclusive content, because occasionally we do release exclusives and they only go out to our mailing list. So I would strongly recommend you go and sign up for that. If you have a few more minutes to be one of the most amazing listeners on the planet, you can go over to iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts and leave us a review, because reviews help us to grow and they help other people to find us. So if you want to help us reach those goals, please jump in and give us a review. The final message that I'd like to leave you with is to let you know about our Patreon account. Now, Patreon is a way for creators to get paid for creating, and ultimately what we do does cost money to get us hosted and have the services that we need to run the podcast. And so if you'd like to help us do that, jump over onto patreon.com/oztabletalk, and you can give anything from even $1 a month upwards. But at different levels there are different benefits, different rewards that we want to give you, just to say thank you for being an amazing supporter of ours. If you can't afford that, we would just gratefully accept your prayers, because that is what our ministry runs on. And so with that, I will leave you to your day, and thank you so much for listening to this episode. We look forward to seeing you guys next week.